I meant Steve. I was before I checked the beans.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is 12:06 p.m. July 29th, 2024. That tells you what kind of a morning it's been. This is a public input session, so not a hearing, not an informal hearing, just strictly that, a public input session for NSP's natural gas rate increase. So this is basically for the public to provide commentary. We will start with the company giving a presentation so that the public has a chance to see what the rate case is about that they're going to be commenting on. These used to get, it seems like, more activity from the public than they have in the last few years. I think that's all they have to say to open up. By the way, unlike our hearings, anything that's said today, it's not under oath. We don't swear the public in for these things. But Commissioner Fedorchak, did you have anything else to add before we start? I'm
guessing you wanted to go to Sherry first because this is gas.
Oh, yeah. Commissioner Haugenhofer, did you have anything to add to that?
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, my sincere apologies for being a few minutes late. I think these public hearings are so important. We hope that we can hear from some of the public on their concerns or comments that they have regarding this potential this increase for them. It's so important for us as commissioners to hear from the public because we do take it into consideration when evaluating cases. There's a lot of information I'm sure the company goes through, but not at these public input, but a general overview. And I'm interested to hear what NSP says to the general public regarding their rate increase. So I want to thank everyone for being in attendance, and hopefully we have some people online that are willing to speak.
Now I will turn it over to you, Commissioner Fedorchak, as portfolio holder, for any opening comments, and then just turn it over to the company or whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Crispin. So welcome to the public input session. As Sherry said, it's a great opportunity for us to hear from the public. The public comments help us sort of gauge some of our questions, how we explore the rate case, what sort of issues we might not be thinking about already that the public brings to light. It also helps our advisory staff do the same and get ideas from how the case impacts the public or how the public is thinking about it. So really is helpful to hear from the public on these opportunities. So it's tradition at these public input sessions for the company to kind of give an overview of the case, what they're asking for, what the drivers are of the rate increase requests. And then after that, we welcome the public to either online or in the room, and we don't have any members of the public, I don't think, here to testify or to comment. I shouldn't say testify, but to comment. But if some of the guests who are here want to comment, you're certainly welcome to. And then also we'll see if there's anybody online and go from there. So with that.
If I could just interrupt for one thing or a couple things. As we go here, if, like the last couple rate cases, if public input is very limited, we might not stay open the whole hour and a half. If some time goes by and just nobody's calling or entering the room, we may shut down earlier than the, I think, 2 o'clock that we had it scheduled for.
1:30, I think.
Till 1:30. And then...
this evening.
Oh, yeah, we will redo this again tonight at 5:30 for people who are at work or something and just can't be here today.
Okay. With that, I think, Alex, go for it.
Thank you very much, Commission and staff, for having me here today, and as well members of the media and whoever might be following along online and providing comments either today at noon or for our 5:30 session. My name is Alex Nesbitt, and I'm a regulatory policy specialist for Xcel Energy, and I'm located out of our Fargo office. With me on the line, I've got four people that cover various areas as far as this filing. If you fellows on the phone are able to, I'd maybe have you introduce yourself and just give me a brief description as far as your involvement in this matter.
Sure. Excuse me. Hi, everybody. I am Lisa Peterson. I am the Director of Regulatory Pricing and Analysis here for Xcel Energy, and I manage the pricing team for us. So the class cost of service, rate apportionment, or I'm sorry, revenue apportionment and rate design all sort of fall in my purview. It's nice to see you all today. And I echo the commissioner's comments that we do really appreciate public input on our case. And very much your input is a part of the decision making here. So thank you very much for those that are able to join.
I'll jump in next. Thank you, Commission. Ian Dobson. I'm the lead assistant general counsel for Xcel, covering the Dakotas along with some of our other northern jurisdictions. Appreciate the, like Lisa said, we appreciate the opportunity to be here and to hear from the public.
I can jump in next. Hello, I'm Amber Headland. I'm a manager in regulatory affairs for NSPM, which is Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota. And my focus is on the rate cases. So really appreciate being here and hope I can answer some questions.
Hello, my name is Mary Pope. I'm a principal rate analyst on our revenue requirements team. And I appreciate being here, and let me know if you have any questions for me.
Thanks, everyone. I believe that's all that we have on the line. So we'll get into it. As you indicated, this is just going to be sort of a brief slideshow presentation involving the high points of our natural gas rate increase that we filed. At any point in time, you can jump in with questions for me if you have anything, or towards the end. I've watched MDUs, and it appears that we won't run out of time probably. But at any point in time, if you want to jump in and ask me anything, do not hesitate. So the reason we're here today is the public input session for our 2023 natural gas notice of change of rates for North Dakota. We'll go to the second slide. In North Dakota, our natural gas service area is depicted on this map. You'll see the Red River there. Obviously, we're dealing everything on the eastern or the western side of that. We cover 63,000 customers in North Dakota. We have 1,150 miles of distribution mains. Our biggest communities are Fargo, Grand Forks, West Fargo, Horace. I know it was stated in the filing, I think over the last 5 years, we've seen an increase of around 11% of our natural gas customers in the state, and that trend is expected to continue. I live in South Fargo, and I can attest to the fact that there's constant growth southwest in that whole area. So it's something good to see, and we continue to invest in our infrastructure, and happy to see the growth in the region around us. Part of the thing that helps that growth is having natural gas that's clean burning, convenient, and low cost.
Alex, you said we could ask questions as we go along.
Absolutely.
So you said about 11% increase in growth. Can you just touch base meanwhile you have the communities up where you have seen that increase in that growth?
Yeah, I think the majority of the growth would be in the Grand Forks, Fargo, West Fargo, Horace area. I know very much, and I've talked with Richard Derryberry, who's one of our top natural gas guys. I think as far as the entirety of our service areas, I think system-wide for the company, Horace, West Fargo, that's where they're seeing the most growth. I don't know if anybody on the line has something different, but that's generally my understanding. And my personal anecdotal evidence is, yeah, there's lots of growth in that area. Thank you. Going on to slide 3. So this is a natural gas rate case increase that we're asking for, and with this slide, it speaks to the main reason that we're here, the drivers for it. So since the last rate case that we filed, In September of 2021, we've continued to make investments in the infrastructure on our system. Main reasons for that are reliability, safety, and also increased customer growth. And then also sometimes it's just required by various government authorities. One good example of that would be a relocation project around our Fargo-Moorhead flood diversion project, where we're having to move some of our infrastructure associated with that, and just other reliability improvements and investments that we're making on our natural gas peaking plant system. We have three peakers. I think one is natural gas, and then the other two are propane. We're just continuing to make investments in those for peak load days where we can vaporize LNG or propane and be able to put that on the system as necessary. So we're continuing to invest in that. And then also just general information technology, fleet modernization, and improvement to facilities is really kind of the bulk of the investments that we've made since our last case was filed. Which then leads into...
Alec, before you go to the next, the things that you cited, the flood diversion and needing to make changes to your existing infrastructure, is that paid for then by the company, or does the flood diversion pay for that since they're requiring you to move it around?
That's a good question. I don't know if anybody on the line can speak to that, that a lot of those negotiations and discussions would have been prior to my time. But and I think some would maybe be in the testimony, but if anybody on the line could speak directly to that.
You know, this is Ian Dubs, and I'll jump in. I don't know the mechanics of how that works. Obviously, we are incurring costs because of it, but I think to your specific question of how that's broken down, I don't know, but we can try to look into that and get a better answer than what I can provide here today.
Okay, thank you.
Just to follow up, that was one of my questions too, but if there was any monies available to help with the impact of the Fargo-Moorhead flood diversion. I thought there was some monies available, so I'd also be curious about that.
No, good questions.
Yeah, we'd be happy to look into that too.
On to slide number 4. So, as discussed, we filed a rate case in 2021, which is a 2022 test year. What we're looking at for this natural gas rate increase is our projected 2024 test year. We filed this rate case at the end of last year. We filed it December 29th of 2023 after we'd done all of our projections and our various revenue requirements. We saw that we were going to end up with a $8.5 million deficiency over the approved rates from our last natural gas rate case. So that's is what's spelled out more in our application and driven in large part due to those investments that we just discussed on the prior page. So that was the overall deficiency that we're looking at is an $8.5 million deficiency. With that, we also filed an interim rate increase that went into effect in March 1 of 2024. That interim rate increase was $7.9 million. That's subject to refund, and once final rates are put into effect. We've got, I think as we put on the first page, we have our public hearing for this matter is on September 3rd, 2024. So we're figuring that final rates will be effective come the fourth quarter of this year. And at that point in time, if there's a refund associated with the interim rates that have been in effect, then we'll be refunding those to customers at that point in time. On the right half of the screen, this is where we just give kind of a brief overview of the four major classes and then the proposed bill impacts that would be associated with this rate increase. Residential is the first one, and that those are the increases that we'll be discussing more on the next slide. For an average residential customer, we'd be seeing an increase of $6.75 of their monthly bill, and that equates to about a 12.5% increase over what they're currently seeing. That's what we proposed in our application. And the other big thing to be pointing out, and I guess to go through this slide through the top. So as we have it right now, for a 65 therm residential average monthly customer, what they're seeing on their bill right now is about $54. And what we're looking at on this pie chart on the right-hand side is that normally there would just be two big slices of it, usually about a 41, 40%, 60%. That would be broken out into our delivery services charge. And then the other charge that's usually bigger, it's the cost of gas charge. The cost of gas charge is just a flow through commodity costs that we charge customers that we don't benefit off of. What we do, what we're talking about today is overall our fixed delivery services charge, which is currently $22.25. Those fixed delivery services charges, that is what the company charges our customers to bring gas to your home via our local distribution system, our pipes, meters, trucks, billing, gas procurement, engineering, construction ops, etc. So that's the delivery services charge that is fixed. It's sort of that bluish, I'm partially colorblind, so I'll guess here on the colors, but it's that 41-ish percent. That's the fixed charge, and then the commodity price for the cost of gas, that's that 52. You'll see now that there is a third slice in this pie, and that's where we're looking at a volumetric distribution charge. This charge has been proposed in this most recent rate case due to concerns that were raised in the last natural gas rate case by the commission. So we just wanted to be receptive to that and propose it. So as it would break down right now, as we said, it would be about a $6.75 per month increase. $2.75, that would go straight to the fixed monthly delivery services charge, so you'd get to $25. And then the new volumetric distribution charge, which is about 6.15 cents per therm, that would be added on a volumetric basis. So if you're an average residential customer at 65 therms, that's what gets you to that extra $4. So between those two new increases, that's what would get us to our new proposed rate increase. So that largely covers that. As you've said, the last bullet point is just that usually this, the larger bite of the pie has to do with, yeah, those commodity prices, the volumetric gas charges that on average are about 60%, and then they're bigger in the winter time up to about 74%. The last slide speaks to that a little bit more. These are Xcel Energy average gas bills during our winter heating season. It goes back over a decade, back to 2012, 2013. The bottom delivery services charge, as you'll see, that's stayed fairly constant. I think the delivery services charge were the same for about 15 years, and then we increased them in 21 or filed in 21, and then they're effective in 22. And then we're coming back now a couple of years later with this latest increase. So the bottom line is, once again, those delivery services charge, the big chunk of the charge is the gas costs. And as you can see, it fluctuates a fair amount from year to year. And that's driven widely on a monthly basis due to price fluctuations from the market and also customer gas usage, whether it's a cold winter, et cetera. So the main thing to point out here is that if you look at the Consumer Price Index, which is that black line starting 2012, 2013, we've stayed well below that out to this point in time. And then also just to look at how those commodity prices sometimes drive the overall cost, 21, 22, 23, like we had some colder winters, some more expensive gas costs, et cetera, there. So with that, it largely concludes my comments. Anybody, any of the commissioners, if you have any further questions, anybody online, we'd be happy to field additional questions at this time.
Thank you, Alex. Is there any more detail you can provide in terms of the drivers? Some of the new investments and even like the safety improvements, the replacement of the outdated pipe, like what percentage broadly of the identified drivers could you place on each one of them in terms of their overall impact on their request for higher rates?
Yep, great question. And Lisa or Mary, I don't know if one of you, if we want to get into a bit more granular dollars, it's, and we've been talking with Chris, staff has been doing a great job of digging into this, but yeah, a lot of these are just capital related, but if somebody on the line, yeah, either Mary or Lisa wanted to throw some numbers kind of on the bigger side of things, I think that might be helpful.
Anybody have more information?
Yep, I'm sorry. I'm having a little trouble getting my mic on. So
okay.
This is Mary Pope. I work in revenue requirements. And as Alex said, this is very much a capital-focused rate case. The biggest driver of all of the pieces listed there are the happening in our distribution system. That's by far the biggest driver of the case. And that will include the things, some of the bullets you see there, the replacement of the meter modules, the safety improvements. Almost all of those first four bullets fall into the distribution system. The gas peaking plants are farther down the line as far as the size.
So the Aldo A and vintage steel, the safety improvements, so replacing that. How much more of that do you guys have to replace? And will that be completed with this request?
Unfortunately, I don't have that detail, but I can find out for you.
Okay. Well, and we'll get some of that in the rate case, too. I think it's important for any public listening to understand kind of why you're asking for this. What benefits are they going to get from it? And I think the safety is an issue that, you know, we all take very seriously and customers do as well. So understanding how big of a driver that is important.
Yep, I can get some details for you.
And the replacement of the meter modules, is that just the in-home meter modules or what are... Help us understand that.
Ian or Lisa, do either of you have more information on that?
Sorry, this is Ian Dobson. We are all having trouble getting off mute. I apologize for that. Yeah, it is the physical replacement of the meters. We are moving to a different technology because of vendor issues, and so we're doing this like sort of across our jurisdictions. What I don't know that I wish I had for you right now is where we are in that process in North Dakota. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it is actually physically replacing the meter modules at each location.
Do you happen to know how old the current ones are?
They, if I'm remembering correctly, I mean, they're sort of a variety of ages, obviously, but they are in the, if I remember correctly, 20-year-ish range. Some of them may be older. But I think that's kind of about average to where they are.
And when you say there's vendor issues, is that code for you can't, the maintenance on them is harder now because there aren't parts, or what does that mean, vendor issues?
I think there's a broad, yeah, in general, there's a broader industry-wide changeover to the new technology. And so I'm trying to make sure that I don't, because I'm getting out to sort of the edge of my knowledge on this, and I want to make sure I don't say anything incorrect. But I think generally what we are trying to make sure that we're doing is, I think we're running to the end of our contract on these, on the current meters we have, and we're getting to the point where we're getting replacement meters and replacement parts is becoming, we're going to be facing challenges very, very soon. And so we need to do the changeover to the broader technology that is being used.
Okay, thank you.
Can you explain to me a little bit more when you talk about investments in the natural gas peaking plants?
Sure, I'll jump in. Again, Ian Dobson. The main issues that we had at a couple of our peaking plants were new fire suppression systems. The fire suppression systems that we had on them were both quite old. I want to say they were from, I believe, the 60s. And so in one instance, well, we looked at both of those plants and sort of had to upgrade the safety features. And one, we went with a secondary secondary water input system so that we've got some resiliency on both of those to make sure that if there's a fire, we've got good water supply. And then the other one, we went with a mounding technique where basically, effectively, we sort of buried the storage tanks in order to deal with that fire, the instance of a potential fire.
Okay, thank you.
And could you go to that last slide, please, with the average gas bills? So you got a little over a decade here, and just one of the common questions or comments that we get in public input, in this case, you're seeking, what was it, 12.5% increase. So a common statement we will get is 12.5%, that's more than the rate of inflation on, you know, eggs or whatever they perceive to be the high inflation thing of the time. But this is not an annual thing. This rate cases happen in over longer increments than that. But I was kind of surprised. If you're seeking a 2024 test year, the last one had a 2022 test year, usually it's about 3 years between rate cases instead of just two. So I'm wondering, how many rate cases have there been in the period of your graph here?
I think, to my understanding, the rates were the same, and I think you'll see 12, 13, all those are flatlined, and I think they were at $18.48 was the services delivery charge up that during that entire period of time. And then 21, 22, you'll see the interim rates where it bumped up, and then it went back down again, 22, 23, and then here we are. So in this, there's just the two increases. There's the 21, 22, and then what we're seeing now. So only two different times it's increased.
Oh, but the last one was after only a two-year period too, huh?
Correct. Well, yeah, so it's the first time would have been over a 15-year span would have been 21, 22.
Okay.
Vic, thank you. Looks like he wants to...
I'll just ad lib. So the prior to the 2021, 22 rate case, the last one was, I want to say, 2011. It was quite a gap in there from the last.
I thought it was even longer.
It could have been. I'm just blanking on the specific year, but it was.
Yeah.
It was prior to this graph, the last increase.
Yeah.
For NSP gas specifically, prior to 21, 22.
Hi, this is Amber Headland. I just wanted to say before that that case, it was 2006. It was a 2007 test year in that case.
So I believe in the rate case 2022, we denied the volumetric, correct? We just stayed with the base rate, correct?
We,
I don't know if they asked for it.
I think you asked for it, did you? Did you ask for it in that case?
I think it was proposed, and then yeah, the order speaks to it, and then there's also a dissent in the order speaking to the volumetric charge.
Okay. So why don't you just explain a little bit more if your delivery service and your distribution charge are the same, why separate it out? Why go and do a volumetric, add in a volumetric?
It's a great philosophical discussion and debate. I think, Lisa, if you wanted to jump in here and discuss that a bit.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. I believe in the last case we did not propose a volumetric charge, but another party perhaps did, and that was where the conversation was in the last rate case we filed. In this rate case, we, of course, we do a class cost of service study as part of the rate case analysis, and we took a look at that, and that indicated that for customer-related costs that vary with the addition of a new customer. For example, you need a new meter, you have different, it takes some billing setup, it takes, you know, customer service, all of those customer-related costs. We took our class cost of service study portions out our costs based on what's causing them, and our customer-related cost in this case for our class cost of service study were a little more than $25. And so when we looked at the other portion of the class cost of service study that we look at, one of many portions, I should say, is the overall residential increase that would be at full cost causation. And compared to what customers are paying today in the residential class, the increase that our class cost of service study indicated to get them to paying full costs was 24.5% based on our revenue requirement that we filed in direct testimony. Obviously, we're not going to increase the residential class 24.5%, but we do want to make, we would like to make progress in getting the residential customers closer to paying their full costs. And so we took a look at how much of that cost increase, we thought the residential customers should bear, and we came up with 12.5%. And then of that dollar increase, the $6.75 increase, we didn't feel it was necessary to raise the customer charge for them, the basic delivery services charge above what our class cost of service study indicated, which was, I believe it's $25.50 or something like that. And so we thought a volumetric charge was also indicated based on our cost of service. The other thing that we did take into account was the, you know, the message that we did receive through the hearing last time that, you know, at least one of you commissioners were considering a volumetric charge to be appropriate for the residential class. And so sort of taking all of that in sum, that's where we landed on our proposal.
Thanks for the good overview. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Clayton, do we have any folks online? No. Do the members of the media want to make any public comments? All right.
Don't be shy.
Oh. All right. Well, in the last two public input sessions, we've kept it open for at least 10 minutes or so, 10 to 15 to 20, depending on how long should we stick around, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think in those cases we had spent as much time talking. So it's actually, you know, we've been open for over 40 minutes, and I had checked with Clayton earlier, and there were no callers then either that we overran by talking too much. So I mean, I just don't feel compelled to use up a lot of the company's time, which the ratepayers end up paying for, our time, which the taxpayers end up paying for. So I think if we gave it another 10, 12 minutes, if nobody calls in.
Okay. We have the evening session as well. All right. Well, is there any other information we can learn from the company while we have them here on this? I'm kind of hesitant to get too much into things not being at the hearing. So, Victor?
We could talk about the manufactured gas plant cleanup. That could be fun.
So fun. What's the latest? Is that what you mean? Get a status report?
Yeah.
I think it's continuing to be cleaned up. I was nowhere near Cleveland that night, Your Honor. I think it's continuing to chug along nicely. If anybody on the line wants to add anything further. But, yeah, I think we're fairly close to recouping all expenses associated with that. And I think we've made a filing as far as a refund that we received on a different file that could potentially use to cut down that regulatory expense sooner as well. So that's the bulk of my update on that.
If I'm remembering correctly, there was some outstanding efforts to have insurance coverage on that. Has there been any progress?
Great question. Ian, does that ring a bell?
I'm not aware of that, but that certainly doesn't mean it hasn't happened. But I think we'll put this on the list of things that we've kind of built up to get back on. Because I know some people that I would need to call to get that information. I can do that.
So one thing I would like to say, if there's no public listening, I guess primarily to our friends from the press that I don't believe have covered a rate case before. We have full hearings, though, where witnesses will be under oath. And I don't want someone to come away with the impression that we have a 45-minute discussion and base a decision of this magnitude on that. Our team of experts that work here are digging into this. We have consultants. We'll have a several-day hearing, barring a potential settlement in the meantime.
This is pre-filed testimony.
Yeah.
There'll be another round.
It is far more intense than this. This is just the public input session. But we're into this stuff, so we end up asking questions.
I think we have three big binders back in our office, and then that's the some of the rebuttal testimony after the original testimony.
You're welcome to read it all. It's online.
Do you want to repeat the case for me?
23-367.
This is Chris Hanson from staff. I have a quick question about the for the listeners out there and for the media. Explain the difference between having just a base charge and a volumetric charge and how that would look different on a person's bill for somebody that might not be informed on that.
Yeah, Lisa, are you prepared to speak to that?
Sure, I am, yes. The basic delivery charge that we currently have of $22.25 is a fixed charge that you would see on your bill as a line item. It would always be $22.25. In this case, we propose to make it $25. So if that, wherever that lands in this rate case, you would pay the same amount every month. Say it's $25, that's what you would pay. And then the distribution charge is a volumetric charge, meaning it's a rate of dollars per therm. And so that is going to be charged against what usage you use in that month in your billing month. And so if you use 65 therms, you multiply that by the distribution rate, similar to how you are charged for fuel. When you use more, you pay more in fuel in total dollars in your bill. When you use less, you pay less. Those would be two separate lines on your bill. Then the delivery services charge would be that fixed charge each month, and then the distribution charge would be would vary. The rate would remain the same, but the amount you use each month changes, and therefore what you're billed, the total dollars you're billed on that distribution charge would change. And as you might imagine, for those that have, the majority of folks have winter heating load that they are heating through natural gas, that's where you'll get quite a different your distribution rate multiplied by your winter usage would be quite different than your distribution rate times your summer usage that maybe only includes cooking and your drying or things like that.
Lisa, the one thing I just want to point out on that is if you didn't add the distribution charge, and the estimated $4 per month would be added to the fixed charge, the basic service charge. So then the basic service charge to get service for anybody, any residential customer, would be $29 versus $25. Right?
That's correct. That's correct. And I just as a offhand comment, we did note that in our testimony and offer that up as an alternate. We proposed the two-part rate, as it were, the delivery services charge and the distribution charge as separate charges, but we also noted the $29 and offered that as an alternative that we would be supportive of as well.
Thank you. No, nobody's calling in.
I think we could wrap it up, don't you?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. With no callers and no one in the room seeking to comment on the case, we'll wrap this up and save the company, the ratepayers, and the taxpayers money here and reconvene, basically do this all over again, have the company go through the explanation in case some new public people are either here or monitoring online. That'll be at 5:30. And with that, this public input set.
5:30. Unfortunately, it's 5:30.
Okay, so 5:30 it is. Thank you, everyone. This public input session is closed.